This is an interview with Mr. Alex Baptist and Mr. John Barron for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by David Arms at Vianna Air Force Base, Vianna Township, Ohio, February 27, 1976, at approximately 11:30 in the morning. I'd like to start this interview off by asking each of you in turn, John, probably first, could you just give me a little bit of your background, personal background, where were you born, that type of thing?
Yeah, I was born in Maysville, Ohio in the year of 1925, and I graduated from Brookfield High School in 1943. Went to the Navy for 2 years, came back home in about 1952. The base was being built, and I noticed an article in the Youngstown Vindicator that they were taking applications for employment out here. So I submitted a federal application to Selfridge Air Force Base up in Michigan, and about 6 months later, was interviewed at the Youngstown Air Reserve Base, received a job in the fire department. That was on November 3rd, 1952. I've been here ever since.
And so what's your job now?
I'm assistant chief at the fire department.
Where did you get your training? Did you take any formal training?
Yes, I received firefighting school while I was in the Navy in 1944, and since I've been here, I went to firefighting school down in Keysperfield, Mississippi. I've been to Chanute Air Force Base two different times for fire department training, and only last September I went to rescue school out of Chanute.
I see. Alex, how about you? Just give me a little bit of your personal.
Well, I was born in Girard, 1921. Went to Girard schools. I got out of school about 37, 38, somewhere around there. Went to work for U.S. Steel Corporation, McDonald Works. Went to service, 1944. I went to the Navy, 2 years, got out in 46, applied for federal employment at Lordstown, and I was offered a job over there, but I refused it because I was making more money at the U.S. Steel. Then when I heard about this place here opening up, I came out here. In July of 1952, submitted an application right here on the base, and within a week's time, I got hired. Was hired on the 14th day of July, 1952, and I was hired in as a auto body repairman and painter, and. When the base then transferred over from the regular fighter base to reserve status, why then I transferred over to a fire truck mechanic, and I've been here ever since 1952, since the place opened.
So your job now is a mechanic on the fire trucks?
Right, strictly fire truck mechanic.
I see. Have you received any special training for this?
No, I excepting here a year ago, this month, I was sent to Dobbins Air Force Base in Georgia for just a familiarization course on a new fire truck that we have in use right now, which nothing pertaining to maintenance, just to get familiar with the truck, and that's it. We just use our own judgment and read our manuals and find out what's wrong and how to fix it. That's it.
I see. So does your job include any firefighting at all, or are you strictly a mechanic?
Well, in case they need any help, why, I have had just a little experience. I can give the people help if they need it, such as operating the equipment and taking it to the scene or anything they may ask me to do.
I can do that. So both of you basically came to work when this was a U.S. Air Force base, right, back in there. Could you just give me an idea of, you know, some of the changes that have taken place? What you used to do when this was an active Air Force base?
Well, fire department job's pretty much the same. But as far as the base itself is concerned, when we arrived here, when I arrived here, about half the buildings were up. It was all, well, we just seated down and with rye mostly. It was all barren and like kind of the fall of the year. And it was mostly just about all you could see as far as the grass was concerned, just a yellowish dirt because it was just freshly planted. And then in the course of when I arrived here, we had the F-84 aircraft. 3 or 4 years, then went to the F-86. And then we went even at F-102. We operated out of Selfridge Air Force Base out of Michigan when I first came here, I believe. Then about 1960 or 61, the regular Air Force pulled out. And we were already picked up by the reserve unit, which is on the lower portion of the base. This was the Air Force Base. Active portion was up on this end, and 57 and 58, they installed the lower portion for the reserve unit, the reserve hangar down there, the heating plant, the water system, and their supply building. And it was two independent outfits operating here this particular time. Then we went, as the Air Force pulled out, we went strictly reserve, and we faced an actual base closure in December of 65, which was on a 2-year period. I think the official closing was scheduled for October of 67, and we were pretty fortunate to weather the storm in that. That takes us up about up until today.
It takes us right up to them. Mm-hmm. Right now.
When this place was an active Air Force base and everything, how many people were assigned here, do you remember?
Military or?
Everybody.
Well, when it first started out, it was approximately about 200-250 airmen, plus I would say less than 100 civilians at that time in 1952. Basically, the military came out of Selfridge Air Force Base, and they were in the process of shipping all their equipment down here, and the ones that were here were accepting it and putting it in service and building up our fleet that we have right now.
I see.
And then it gradually built up when after they got the F-84s in, if I'm not mistaken, I think the F-84s were actually flown in here in August or September of 52, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not quite sure on that date.
Alex, at that time, you were in the body shop.
Right.
How many vehicles did they have up there?
Well, when we started out here, we actually started out over in this first hangar. We didn't have a motor pool.
Uh-huh.
This motor pool wasn't built until about a year and a half later.
Mm-hmm.
And I done what work I could do over at the hangar there. And then after the airplanes came in, why then I was moved over here to the fire station.
Uh-huh.
And I was doing my work here in the fire station, what little work there was to be done. It mostly it was changing, just minor changes of registrations on their vehicles and transferring from Selfridge to Youngstown and different things like that, which was very little bit of painting to get rid of corrosion and stuff like that. But didn't really get into it until the motor pool was completed in approximately the latter part of 53. Then we went into full-scale major repairs then.
I see.
And then that went on there until 1960. About April 1960. Then they done away with the body and painting end of it. And then they transferred me over, since I had experience in mechanical work, they transferred me then over to a automotive mechanic. Well, and from there, why I wasn't in that long, I was, they had an opening for a foreman, and I applied for it, and I got it, which was about 2 months after the reserve, or I mean, yes, after the reserve unit took over. And I held that position until 1965, when they had a reduction in force. And being the youngest of the foremen at that particular time, why then I had to revert back to mechanics. And then I have been fire truck mechanic then ever since that time.
I see. So after the motor pool was established and everything, about how many vehicles did the base ever have? What was the most they ever probably had?
About 275, approximately.
I see.
That area.
And what, I'm not very up to date on the Air Force requirements and everything. What's the most common type of vehicle that the Air Force might use? Or?
Well, they vary. They have just more or less small trucks, sedans for normal transportation around base. Then you get into your construction equipment. They do a lot of construction. They get into materials handling, like forklifts and warehouse tractors and aircraft towing tractors. And then you get into your fire equipment, and that's basically normal everyday 1.5 tons, half ton pickups and everything else that's used all the time.
I see.
The engineering equipment, construction equipment isn't used every day.
I see.
It's just here for mostly training purposes.
I see. Now, where do these vehicles and this equipment come from?
Well, they come direct from the Air Force supply depots.
That's throughout the country?
The government procures them all.
I see. And now, how do vehicles get sent here? Do you know? In other words, do they go out and request them? Are they replaced?
Well, that I don't know too much about that. If you think you need one, you put in a request for it, and if they think you need it, well, they'll give it to you.
I see. But I mean, how often are they replaced and stuff like that?
Well, they have a criteria on that 6-7 years or 72,000 miles it used to be, and whichever comes first.
I see.
And they keep pretty well in with that.
I see. Now, what happens to a vehicle after it's been here 7 years?
It auctioned off, salvage.
From here, or they sent it?
No, they sent it to Columbus General Depot.
I see, down in Columbus. Yeah. Now, on the overall, would you say that the vehicles maintained by the Air Force are in good shape after 7 years?
They're yes, I would say so, because we do all of our work periodically. We have a regular schedule we stick to, like our everything's on a schedule. Your maintenance of re-brake systems, oil changes, lubes, safety inspections. If you think it needs it, why, you go ahead and do it. And practically, they're practically completely rebuilt. Once a year, or once every 2 years.
I see.
And they don't show any rust or anything. They're always painted periodically, and really kept up in pretty good shape.
I see. Now, you mentioned that you applied for federal employment in were accepted to Lordstown but turned it down. That's the Lordstown Arsenal, and there was one out there that...
Right, it was the Army base.
Okay, and then you were applied here.
Right.
What was your interest in working for the government?
Well, at that particular time, it's the only place you could work.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was really something that you could depend on.
I see. You say you worked for U.S. Steel before then?
Right.
You didn't like your job down there, or was it...
It was a job.
I see.
And, you didn't know half the time if you were going to work. It was always going on strikes. You just had to take what they give you.
I see.
It wasn't anything that you could really apply any knowledge to. There was hardly ever any chance of advancement.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wind up being a laborer all your life.
I see.
That's why I figured I'd go and work some kind of work that I liked, why I could probably advance to something higher and be satisfied.
I see. So you came up here to work. Have you ever regretted the decision to come up here at the...
No, not at all. No.
I see. And you've been promoted right along as far as...
Anytime that there was a promotion and I felt that I wanted to apply for it and I was qualified for it, why, it's the way they work it.
I see. I see. How does your family feel about you working out here?
Very well.
They like it. Now, where do you live now? In Georgia?
I live in Cortland now.
Cortland, I see.
I just bought a home in Cortland. I decided, well, I'm going to settle down before too long.
I see.
I'm going to be trying to hit the retirement rolls here in about another 4 years.
I see. I see. What do you see as a future? In other words, do you think the Air Force base here is pretty solid ground, or?
Well, up till now it has been. We don't know what the future holds for us. Mm-hmm. No one knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Because things change every day.
I see.
There's nobody who can predict that.
But you think it's a lot more secure than your job down there at U.S. Steel?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I see. John, on your... you've been in the fire department area most of your life. You went into the Navy and was in fire training there. What'd you do on active duty as far as fire training there?
Did the same thing I'm doing right now, crash fire duty.
Where was this?
Jacksonville Air Force Base, Florida.
Uh-huh. And after you get out of the Navy, you came back home, is that it?
That's right.
Did you ever think of staying in the Navy? And...
Not really.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you enjoy your work, or but you didn't like the Navy, or what type of...
Well, I think everybody likes to be home.
I see. I see. Now, you came up here on the fire crew. How many people were in the crash crew type thing at that time?
We probably had around 20, 25. When I was hired in here, there was only three civilians working here, a chief and two assistants, and they hired additional three civilians. And this was a total of six civilians plus military at that time. I would say probably 20 to 25. But in the course of time, we reached a period where we had a total of military and civilians. Maintaining our six civilians, we went as high as 40 to 42 people working out of the station here.
I see. Now you say you worked right with the military and then the
right.
Civilians? Why was this? In other words, how come it wasn't all military or all civilian? Or?
Some installations go one way or the other, but the Air Force likes to kind of keep a little of each.
Any special reason for that, you know?
Well, just like today is a reserve, the reserves can leave, but the civilians will still be here to maintain it.
I see. But the active duty crew at that time stood the regular shifts right with you and all that
we
kind of?
We pulled identical duty. At that particular time, the civilian was working a 60-hour work week.
Uh-huh.
When I came here. And we just pulled identical duties right with them.
Uh-huh.
At all times.
What do you work for a work week now?
72 hours.
72-hour work week?
And three 24-hour shifts.
I see. And in other words, you work a day and then you have a day off?
That's right.
Is that it?
Every 2 weeks we get 3 days off in succession.
I see. When you worked with the active duty people and everything like that, was there ever any friction did you notice between the civilians and
we got along pretty good because we was being supervised by civilians,
mm-hmm.
and overall the civilian is in charge, the chief is always in charge, although they have their military man as a coordinator with the fire chief, and overall real good, I would say.
Okay. How about throughout the base? Has there ever been any time that you've noticed any real friction or anything like that?
Nothing, you know, of any size.
How about discrimination amongst hiring procedures or anything? Has there been any problem with that you've noticed? Racial or social discrimination or anything?
Very little.
I see. You've been in the Navy and the Air Force both. Do they have a similar firefighting program? Is it all basically the same?
Basically, yes, but each branch of service likes to pick out their own equipment, so the equipment does differ, although basically it's the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about in your time here, have you ever, is there any memorable fires or anything up here? Has there been any big times that the crash crew has ever been used? Or?
Well, overall, we've really been pretty fortunate here, although aircraft, we have lost aircraft in the area. I don't think we ever lost anything here. Although, 102 one evening on base itself here pierced the tanks, and I wasn't here, but I guess they really did a job on it, because it was, I don't know, a couple thousand foot on a runway when he pierced the tanks, and he went out and he did the job on it.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, both pilots did get out of the aircraft.
I see. Now, as part of the responsibilities here, you were also basically the fire crew for the civilian part of the airport, too?
Right. We respond for all civilian aircraft whenever required.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they have their own firefighting down there at Municipal? Or?
No firefighting over there at all. And we have direct communications with the tower here, and we also have a crash phone in the alarm room,
mm-hmm.
from the tower, and all we ask to do is pick up the cradle and it activates us here in the station here.
I see. Now, in your training and everything, do you have periodic drills that you have to get ready for? Or?
Yeah, we have a requirement by Air Force regulations, our structural drills, our hot pit drills, our egress on the aircraft, and all the important stuff are itemized right in the regulation. We have to fulfill it on a week, on a monthly, a quarterly, or an annual basis.
Now, as Assistant Chief, what is your regular, normal day like when you come in?
Fire department's pretty well standardized. The first thing you do in the morning is check out all the equipment. Every piece of equipment we have here is checked out by the driver operator, and it takes approximately an hour and a half on the big equipment. General station cleanup. Here, we are required to maintain a truck on a standby basis anytime an aircraft's flying. And we favor the afternoon. We'll try to get either some drill in for the department or some type of a class for everybody. Evenings are more or less standby, and we require our men in the alarm room 24 hours a day.
I see. So you eat, sleep, everything right here. What kind of meals do you have?
Well, some bring the brown bag, some cook a little, occasionally a holiday or something, while we have a pretty good meal made here in the fire station. We have all the mess facilities here. We have a refrigerator, stove.
But basically the meal, you have to furnish it yourself. It's not furnished by the airport.
Right. The installation is pretty small. We have no open mess going. Uh-huh. We have no place to go.
Now, how about when the reservists are here drilling, let's say on a drill weekend or something like that, do they augment your staff at all at that time? Or?
Yeah, we have the reserve fire department in here that perform the same job.
How, what do you do on a normal? I mean, do you stand the 24 hour, even if you're just a mechanic, or what, you just come in every day? How do you work?
I come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, go home at 4:30 every day. Well, 5 days a week.
5 days a week.
Right. And I just stand by down here, and like John stated, that their equipment is checked over by the operators.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find a discrepancy, why, they call me right away. And if it's something that I can fix in just a few minutes, I just go ahead and do it right away. But if it's a big job, like a leaking pump or something, a component that won't operate, why, then it takes a little longer. But I do most of my maintenance here. But if I need if I need assistance, why, the men help me out too.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a one man job of trying to maintain this big equipment.
Uh-huh.
And if the truck is going to be taken out of service for any length of time for major repairs, then I take it to the motor pool and I tear it down up there, because they have the special tools right there. And if I need the assistance of other mechanics, why, then they're available for helping to get this truck back in service again, because we try to keep them from going out of service. Is the reason I stay down here 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And keep the small stuff in repair so it don't get into major repairs. And we've been pretty fortunate with this equipment now. We have newer equipment, and we don't have too many breakdowns.
I see.
And what we do is just minor, of a minor nature. We keep them up.
Now, when you do, let's say you have a breakdown, you got to take something out of service, is it normally fixed on the base? In other words, do you ever have to take stuff off base to get it fixed?
Fix it right here.
How about parts and everything? You just order those right from the manufacturer? Is that it? Or
some parts we have to, and some parts we can buy locally downtown.
I see. Is the Air Force pretty good on providing spare parts and stuff like that with no problem?
We get them, but
mm-hmm.
sometimes a little slow. We try to keep a stock of fast-moving items
mm-hmm.
on hand when we can. And we've never been out of service too long. See, a lot of our stuff comes from depots.
Uh-huh.
And they stock a lot of the stuff in the depot. Well, sometimes we have to wait for it.
Uh-huh.
But not too often.
I see.
Very rare.
But the money seems to always be there. You don't ever run into money problems with that, do you?
Not that I can could tell you about.
Uh-huh.
All I do is request a certain part, and it's up to the people at the motor pool to get it for me.
I see. So actually, even though this is the fire department, most of the spare parts and things like that come through the motor pool.
All of them do.
I see.
Basically, I work out of the motor pool. I'm connected with the motor pool,
uh-huh.
but I do all my work down here.
I see. So you're not really attached to the fire department at all. You're basically attached to the motor pool.
That is my job.
I see. Now, both of you, like you said, have been here basically since the place got underway and everything like that. Could you just give me a little, start with you maybe, John, a little bit of your back? What have you seen happen that you think might be interesting that people might want to know about? Maybe your little own history of the place. You saw it, you know, develop from a, as you mentioned, with no grass and everything, and here all of a sudden there's a lot of buildings up there.
Well, since I've been here, I think about half the buildings have come up. I don't think, we're running about 45 buildings here now, and I think when I came here we had about 20, 25. And getting back to the amount of people here, I think that our max time, max amount of people here when we was an active installation, I think I'm going to go up around 800 or 1,000 if Al will go along with that. We had 6 barracks here for the airmen, plus we had a big BOQ up there for the officers. And I think with that amount of people, plus the civilians, plus the guys that was living, active duty people that was living off base, I think we was going to be up around 800 to 1,000.
We had that many? at least.
And in the course of time, well, we got involved in a small housing unit out there that was built later. We got into the recreational part, which we built a service club and a base gymnasium. We have our own water system out here. We treat our own water. We have pump wells and treat it and put in the water tank. Our water tank here is approximately 145 feet off the ground. Capacity is around 300,000 gallons. And we have real good water distribution system for all the bigger the installation is. We have our own sewage treatment plant on the far end of the base, which we completely independent out here. As we received the jet type aircraft, we built a test cell, test the aircraft engines. And we, at that particular time, we had an alert hangar, which is still on the far end of the field down here, that a boat taxiway right to the runway there, which we housed aircraft 24 hours a day in that particular alert shelter. Also had ready pilots in it and mechanics down there.
They slept there at home.
Yeah, sleeping quarters and air and all. And at that particular time, when we was an active base, we really flew the aircraft, and we put a lot of time in the line. We was out there every day, barring weather and all, and a lot of times at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, we would, the fire department crews relieved each other out there so it wouldn't be too long a pull for each crew out there.
But there's been a lot of changes in the buildings going up, and now they're coming down, I understand. Is this just a change in the Air Force policy, or the buildings getting too old, or?
Well, our buildings wasn't of the permanent type building, and they felt as though they'd last a period of 10 years, I think, when they first put them up, and they've gotten over 20 years out of them. And the understanding I have now is they'll never replace unless they tear down, so they've started to tear down a few.
Now, you said there was some barracks and stuff. Is there some housing on the base?
There's three housing units out on Kingsgrave Road out here that house, well, there's one single unit and two double units. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, the base commander was in Unit 1, which was the single dwelling unit. Mm-hmm.
Was there a BX and a hospital type thing here at that time, or commissary?
We have a small infirmary on base at that time because of the active duty people. They did maintain people in there 24 hours a day, wasn't it?
Right, had 24 hours.
Our PX facilities was pretty small, but we did have PX. We did have a real small clothing store, very small, but it was a clothing store. Towards about the time that they was ready to pull out, we did get a commissary store on base.
Let me see. Now, most of the people assigned, did they live on base or off base or?
About half. Half.
Half and half.
Yes.
They lived out here in Vienna, or they lived?
Yeah.
Outlying districts.
All around.
So really, when the base closed, it was kind of an economic shock to Vienna, wasn't it?
Very much.
I noticed that. Contrary to a lot of bases, too, it's coming down the road down here. There's no buildings or stores or any of that kind of. Was there ever any stores or buildings or bars or anything out here on this access road into the Air Force Base?
Never.
The bar across the street.
Well, that's on the main highway. Well, he's talking about the access road here.
But it never built up right outside the gate
like
many bases do. Hmm. I see. Now, Alan, maybe in your runs around, did you have any military that worked up at the motor pool at the time, or was it all civilian?
No, it was all military.
All military.
All military but myself. I was the only civilian connected with the motor pool.
I see. And when the active base closed, then?
I was still the only civilian.
I see. But I mean, now that the, when the active base closed and went to reserve, did they all hire all civilians?
Then they start hiring.
I see.
But 3 months before all the military moved out, well, then they started bringing civilians in.
I see. Now, most of these people that come to work, let's say came to work at the time, or come to work up here, do they hold federal jobs someplace else and they just transfer in, or?
Majority of them did. Majority of the people that are on base right now got transferred in from Ravenna Arsenal and Lordstown, and different places like that.
Mm-hmm. How long ago did Lordstown actually close?
I couldn't tell you offhand. John might know.
Probably about 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Lordstown was closing for years and years, you know. And it finally made it, what, about 5 or 6 years ago, I'd say.
Yeah, it has been that long, because we had quite a few of them. Motor pool that came from Lordstown.
I see. Right. So there was an arsenal at Lordstown and an arsenal at Ravenna, basically.
Yeah, right.
I see. So really, now this is the only federal place in this area, or is there any more?
I think it is.
I think it's the only one.
I think it is the only one.
Uh-huh. But at that particular time, the Brookville radar base ran.
Now who ran that?
That was the Air Force. And about the time that this place closed, they went all automatic over there, and it's being run out of Belle Fountain right now.
Uh-huh. That's over in Pennsylvania, then.
No, it's down in Route 7 between Brookville and Hubbard.
Oh, I see. Okay. I don't know where it is. Well, Al, maybe is there something in the history of this place that you remember that stands out in your mind?
I think John pretty well covered all of it.
Uh-huh.
It's, I was only here just a few months before John,
uh-huh.
And he covered all the changes and all the changes that mm-hmm. I have seen while he was here too.
I noticed that this tower down here is a new, a brand new tower type thing and everything. Is that run by the Air Force, or is that run by the Municipal Airport, or what's the relationship with the tower?
FAA.
I see. They run it all. That's a FAA building type.
That's right. This was built, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reason it was built is because our airfield here slopes about 80 or 90 foot on this big runway.
Uh-huh.
And they were not able to view it from the other side over there, the whole uh-huh. airfield itself. So they placed it on this side where they have a view of the whole thing.
I see. The one last thing I wanted to ask you, John, was when they have special groups come in, something like the Thunderbirds, and they have the visit and everything like that, does that require anything special from the fire department here or anything like that?
We pull standbys on them. We make sure we stay closer to them, but we're aware of the situation, and we do take more precautions than normal.
Now, does your responsibilities as fire also include emergency first aid anywhere or anything like that, or is that handled by the dispensary?
Our dispensary now is down to a one-man operation. And here, we've more or less shouldered the ambulance runs and the first aid. And it's your first aid is really getting to be a requirement in firefighting now. As a matter of fact, this rescue school I went to in last September, they give us about 7 days of it out there, and the fire departments are going to your EMTs, your emergency medical training, and we're pretty fortunate here because I think about 10 of our guys have already gone through that school.
Yeah.
And the base is so small, we're not authorized to maintain an ambulance, so we just have a few ambulance left, and for some reason or other, we always get the chores that's required to make the ambulance run to the hospital, and whichever it might be.
I see. Has it been that often that you've used it, or?
Well, we've been pretty fortunate lately, but we have used it.
Mm-hmm. A few times.
An accident on base or something like that.
I see.
We almost used it here a month ago when that car flipped down here on a Monday night. The guys went down with the rescue vehicle and forced their way in. They
So on a drill weekend or something like that, where do these guys that stay now that they're tearing down all these barracks and BOQs and everything, where's everybody staying?
Well, the reserve requirement is if they're within 50 miles, they're supposed to drive. They don't have to stay on base if it's only unless it's over 50 miles. So we have to have two barracks open, one for the NCOs and one for the officers.
Okay, well, is there anything else that either one of you would like to add that I've forgotten to ask or that we were talking about before or anything like that?
No, I think everything's been pretty well covered, pretty thorough. And I don't have any more to add. Can't think of any more.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. This is an interview with Mr. Robert Petko for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by David Arms at the Naval Reserve Center, 315 East Laclede Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, March 10th, 1976, at approximately 2:15 in the afternoon. Mr. Petko, what's your position in the Marine Corps Reserve at the present time?
I'm currently a warrant officer, motor officer in Newcastle, Pennsylvania.
I see you. You're a warrant officer. What grade warrant officer?
CWO2.
CWO2. How long have you been in the Marine Corps?
Since 1959. 17 years.
Has this all been reserve time, or has this been active duty time?
It's all been reserve time.
All reserve time. How about, could you just give me a little bit of background on your personal history? Where were you born, educated?
Born in Youngstown, Ohio. Educated in Struthers High School.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone into the apprenticeship program in the Carpenters Union.
I see. How many children do you have? Are you married? Or?
I'm married and have two children, a boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl. I see. You joined the Marine Corps in 1959.
Yes.
Why did you join the Marine Corps?
Well, I wanted to have some military training, and the reserve program was available at that time. Well, they were both available. Being that I was an apprentice carpenter, I had a job on the outside, and this is the reason why I chose a six-month program.
I see. So you came, you actually went to 6 months active duty, which was a training program, is that it?
Right. It consisted of boot camp, and it was a, I'm trying to think what they call it now. There was some MOS training in the engineer field, and the rest of it was the boot camp that I went to.
So you had to learn how to be a Marine, too.
Right.
I see. Could you give me an idea of how this went about? In other words, what happened? Did you go down to see a recruiter? Or?
No, I came here to the Reserve Center.
I see.
They had, at that time, they had the first sergeant acted as more or less a recruiter for the reserve unit.
I see. And you just signed up at the time and went right to boot camp, or did you stay here for a while?
No, I signed up in, I believe, April.
I see.
And I didn't go away until September of the same year.
And where did you go for your training?
Parris Island.
Parris Island. Did you receive your MOS training in Parris Island?
No, that was up at Camp Lejeune.
Camp Lejeune. Could you be a little bit more specific on your MOS training? What did it consist of?
Well, it was an engineer-type training. We had demolitions, mine warfare, heavy equipment, some carpenter work, construction work.
I see. Now, you were gone a total of 6 months on active duty. How much was each period there?
Well, the boot camp at that time lasted for 13 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then there was an advanced infantry training that lasted probably 3 weeks, and then the rest of it was MOS training.
I see. Was it classroom work? Or
some of both, classroom and field.
And field work.
Right.
I see. Then you returned back to Youngstown and fulfilled your regular job or anything like that?
I came back to Youngstown and went back to work, right?
I see.
Plus attended the reserve meetings.
Now, then your requirement after your 6 months was to attend drill meetings?
Once a month for 6 years.
For 6 years. Right. And then you were also required to take 2 weeks active duty?
Every year.
Every year. I see. could you just give me an idea what you did when you came to drill?
Well, drill weekend, we were in an engineer company here in Youngstown.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time we spent out working on civilian projects, churches, Boy Scout groups, things of this nature.
I see. What did a drill actually consist of, in other words?
Well, at that time, they had just changed over from the once-a-week drills to weekend drills.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be Saturday and Sunday, 8 hours or more each day.
I see. And could you just give me an idea of what, you came in the morning and you did what?
Well, we usually fell in for muster at, say, 07:30. And after that, there was some classroom training. Or if we had work to do on the outside, we'd have on-the-job training.
I see. Did you... have any other function other than, you know, working your platoon? What I'm trying to get at is, how did you advance to the position you're at right now?
Well, for the first couple of years, I was... I was a PFC when I came back.
Mm-hmm.
I probably picked up Lance Corporal in a year and a half or 2 years,
uh-huh.
somewhere around there. And most of the time I was in a platoon until I made Corporal.
Mm-hmm.
I believe after I was promoted to E4, I was moved up to the training office. I worked in training for probably 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I went back into one of the construction platoons.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 1968, I applied for the Warrant Officer Commission Program, and I was accepted in 69. That's when I was promoted to W1.
I see. So, when you applied for the Warrant Officer Program, what was your rate at the time?
E6 Staff Sergeant.
E6 Staff Sergeant. What was the requirement at that time to apply? What did you have to have? So many years in service?
Well, so many years you had to have... over 10 years, you had to be E6. You had to have under 19 years of service.
Uh-huh.
And what they were after was a job or a civilian job related background.
I see.
And I had this in the construction field.
I see.
And it worked out to what the Marine Corps wanted.
Have you received any other training in construction other than through the Marine Corps? In other words, any formal training?
Well, through the union, I've been affiliated with the Carpenters Union for quite a few years.
And they've sent you to school?
Well, they have retraining programs that uh-huh. are available, and I've taken a couple of these.
I see.
As far as welding and different job-related skills.
I see. Now, what does the union send you away for this? Or
no, it's usually a program right here in town.
I see.
I think the ones they have right now, I haven't gone to any for quite a few years, but the ones they have now are probably at the vocational center.
Uh-huh. Now the union pays for all of this, and part of your union.
There's
benefits.
A registration fee, but then they usually pick up the tab on the rest of it.
Okay. Now, this you'd say helped you in your Marine.
It's helped some, yes.
Okay. On your 2 weeks training or anything like that, did you ever attend any schools there?
I've gone to quite a few schools. We've had different construction type schools, and I've gone to NBC school. Mountain warfare.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't really have anything to do with my MOS, but it's Marine type training.
Mm-hmm. So basically, your civilian training has helped you in the Marine Corps, and your Marine Corps training has helped you in.
They both work pretty well hand in hand.
Hand in hand. Why did you want to become a warrant officer, or why did you stay too? That's another question.
Well, I stayed because I like the program and I like the people I worked with. I've always got along good with all the Marines that I've been affiliated with.
Mm-hmm.
The warrant officer program came up in 68 when they really had a shortage of officers, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was just lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time when it was offered.
Mm-hmm. What kind of people do you run into? You say you get along well with these Marines. Is a Marine reservist a stereotype person, or you run a lot of individuals?
No, not really. There's many different types of individuals that you run into. All different types of educations and backgrounds and job classifications.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't say that they're all the same type. They're basically all civilians just doing that one weekend a month.
Why do you, in other words, you told us that you joined basically because you want some Marine or some military training, etc. Why do these fellas come to drill for one weekend a month? Specifically somebody that doesn't have the obligation like yourself. I mean, it's hard on your family. You're away from your family. I mean, the money isn't all that much.
No.
Why do you keep coming?
Well, basically, I think just because you're part of the Marine Corps organization. Being a reserve is it's one way to help your country out, really, if there's ever a need for it. And I think as long as you're physically able to fulfill something like that, I think you should be part of an organization like that. And really, until you're 50 or 55, I think you're on call whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. So I might as well stay in an active unit that I can learn something from and maybe I can contribute a little to.
I see. Could you, you say you've been with the program since 1959. Did you start drilling here in Youngstown? Is that it?
Yes.
And it was an engineering company at the time.
Right. It was the third engineer company.
How many people were in that company? Do you remember?
Probably about 120.
What kind of job did the engineering company do? I realize they did a lot of, you know, civic projects and things. But what was their mission at the time?
Well, their mission was to probably a backup to a regular engineer unit, mm-hmm. on active duty if anything happened where they'd have to be called. That with the type of training they were getting, they'd be able to fill right in with the regular Marine engineers.
What do Marine engineers do?
Well, basically bridge work, road construction, demolitions, mine warfare, things of this nature.
It's similar to the CBs in the Navy, is that it?
I'd say they run up close.
Have you ever done any work with the CBs or anything like that?
A little bit. We've been down to Gulfport, Mississippi one time.
When was this, do you remember?
1969. Got a chance to train with the CBs.
I see. You were sent down for any special project or just training?
No, we went down for training. Just MOS training.
I see. Now, what does an average two-week thing to do? You've been on quite a few, I'm sure, since you've been in the Navy. What's your average activity? What do you do?
Well, as a Marine engineer, most of the time we were either sent to formal school for the 2 weeks or sent down for OJT, on-the-job training. And mm-hmm. on-the-job training would be the same basic skills that I talked about before, the mine warfare, demolitions, bridge work, some construction, just a variety of everything.
Would you say you're a Marine force and an engineer second, or an engineer first and a Marine second when you're on your...
Well, I'd like to think I'm an engineer first and a Marine second, but it's not really that way. Everyone's a basic Marine first, a basic rifleman.
I see.
And your MOS comes in behind that. Mm-hmm.
So when you go down on these 2 weeks, do you get any Marine-type training, or as layman would consider a Marine?
Well, some of the two-week periods are spent on field problems with just Marine training, right?
Mm-hmm. I see. Oh. Now... do you remember when the unit in Youngstown was disbanded or anything?
1971.
And what happened to the people that were in the unit?
Well, they had a choice of either going over to Akron or to Newcastle. Uh-huh. And the majority went to Newcastle, probably because it's closer. There's mm-hmm. a few that went over to Akron.
I see. What do you think was the reason for closing this if they didn't get rid of any people?
Well, I think they closed down here in Youngstown because the base was owned by the Navy, and the Marine Corps is more or less leasing the property or whatever it was. And the unit over in Newcastle had their own mm-hmm. training center, which was strictly Marine Corps, the same in Akron, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. At the time, there was a large reorganization program going on in the Marine Corps, and I imagine a lot of the politicians had a lot to do with which ones stayed and which ones went. I think the biggest factor was sharing the training center with the Navy.
Do you think the Marine Corps didn't get along with the Navy?
No, it wasn't that. It was just the idea that, like, Newcastle had their own training center, and I think that's why they just made the move there.
I see. While we're on that subject there, do you remember how was the relationship between the Marine Corps and the Navy?
Here in Youngstown?
Here in Youngstown.
I think it was pretty good. We always seemed to get along pretty good. We had our weekends, and the Navy would come in during the week at that time. And I think the Seabees had a weekend, and it usually wasn't any problem at all.
I see. Now, do you remember what parts of the center the Marine Corps used at that time?
Well, they used the drill deck, and I'd say it'd probably be the left wing, first floor, and left wing top, the top deck.
So they used basically the left side
of
the building,
time, right.
Bottom and
top. Except the corpsmen, and they used the same place where the Navy corpsmen were at.
I see. Now, when you were here, were you required to clean up and everything after you were done?
Right. It's just same as what your people would do.
I see. How about food and things like that? How did you eat on when you went to this weekend thing?
Well, they usually had a caterer that would bring either sandwiches or a hot meal in, depending on where we were at. If we were out in the field, they usually had box lunches made up.
Uh-huh.
And there was a few times we'd have field rations.
How was the food? Do you remember?
It was fair.
Okay. I see. In the officer groups, is there any getting together of the officers at any time or?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, when we're down at ATD, our annual training, there's a good opportunity for all of them to get together. The way we have it now, we try to have meetings on evenings before the drill, and we get together and discuss a lot of the problems.
How about socially?
Well, most of the officers in Newcastle right now live so far apart that the only time we really get together is on drill weekends.
I see.
They come from Cleveland, Erie, as far south as Pittsburgh. It's really, really tough to get together other than drill weekend.
How about on ATD? Socially, do you get together? Or?
We usually have a pretty good opportunity to see each other. There's, I think, 11 of us over there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for the two-week period that we're down there, there's usually four or five nights that we can all be in the same place at the same time, usually at the probably at the club or places like that.
What's the attitude of the officers? Are they optimistic towards the Marine Reserve? Or?
Well, the ones that are in over there are more or less in favor of the program that they have going right now. There's quite a few of them that would like to stay that have to get out. I mean, after you have so many years in or you're passed over a couple of times, you just automatically get out. But most of the ones that are there are dedicated enough to stay and do the job that's required of them.
How about, have you seen a change in the Marine Reserve in the time you've been in?
Well, in the last couple of years, recruiting has been a little tougher. The type personnel that come in aren't quite the caliber that they had before. During the Vietnam crisis, they had quite a few more college graduates that were reserve members. Since 1972, I think the recruiting has gone down, not just the Marine Corps, but all the services.
Mm-hmm.
The caliber of people you get aren't as good as what you had before.
Do you mean intelligence-wise or desire to do the job
well,
right?
Well, both intelligence and desire. There's something lacking in most of the young kids that come in right now.
Do you think this is true in our own society, or is this
well,
the good guys just aren't coming around?
That's what it amounts to. There's no pressure on people to join either the reserve or regular. I think the regular Marine Corps and Army and Navy have the same problem. I've heard quite a few complaints about that.
In other words, you don't think that we don't have as many good guys around?
No, the people are there. There just isn't any incentive for them to really come in.
Why do you think that some of these guys are coming in today?
Well, basically, it's because of the job situation. The ones that do come in are unemployed or having a tough time finding jobs. I'm talking about the young kids that are right out of high school.
You don't, that person isn't as dedicated the Marine Corps, or what, is more self-centered?
Well, I can't say they're not as dedicated. It may take them a couple more years to come around.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple years, it's kind of tough to get to them. Mm-hmm. But I can't say they're not as dedicated, because in time, 2 or 3 years, they might they might really make good Marines.
I see. Now, when you became an officer per se, received your commission, and was this an adjustment, a difficult adjustment for you in any way?
Well, it was. I was an enlisted man for I think 11 years before I picked up my warrant, and it took about a year to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm. What, in other words, how do you think your relationship differs now? I mean, you still put your right leg, pant leg on your left one. I mean, you're no different that way.
No, I don't feel I'm any different at all.
Uh huh. But surely your relationship must have changed with the people you work with.
Well, not really. Being a warrant officer, you're sort of right in the middle. It's uh-huh. You're not enlisted, and not a commissioned officer.
Mm.
And being that I don't have a college degree, and with the education background, say a lieutenant or a captain would have, I don't feel that. I'm not on the same level, and I really just don't. I don't think a warrant officer program is equal to the commission program, and it's halfway in between the enlisted and the commission officers.
Do you think you're discriminated against being a warrant?
No, I can put up with quite a bit.
No, but I mean, I'm sure you can't. Is there a discrimination there?
No.
You're not felt to be inferior in any way?
No, I have my own place there, and
I see.
I think it's not too hard to get along with.
I see. Now, how about any racial discrimination? Have you ever noticed any racial discrimination in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I have. Not so much here in Newcastle, but
uh-huh.
down at Camp Lejeune, there's some, and it comes up every once in a while.
Uh-huh. Do you think it's as serious as...
As serious as the newspapers say?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it is. I think the papers try to magnify it a lot. There are problems. Sometimes it's racial, sometimes it isn't. But it seems that the newspapers try to bring it out more than what really goes on, takes place.
Now, you say you've seen it down at Camp Lejeune. In what fashion? Not being allowed to sit at the same mess? Or
no, not that.
Or
they're
being shunned aside?
Demonstrations out in public were, this was a couple years ago, where the Black Power program was really strong. But really, the people that took part in those were after the attention that the news media would give them. So I think this is all really the problem that was there was the attention that they were getting from it.
I see. Is it a different Marine Corps than it was, let's say, when you joined?
No, I don't think so. I think it's still about the same. Same type training, and well, there's a lot of new methods and new ways of doing things, but it's still about the same thing.
The Marine Corps has always been known to be hard-nosed, gung-ho, that type of thing. Do you think any of that's lacking?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think they're missing a bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been a lot of changes in the Navy and the Naval Reserve and the longer hair and all this kind of thing. But you don't think any of that's come over into the...
It has.
But it hasn't affected the Marine Corps?
Well, the long hair in the reserve program is a problem because these kids are only weekend Marines, and they only come in Saturday and Sunday. And you can respect their wishes and desires to have longer hair, because it's really part of today's culture to be 21 with long hair.
Do you see the Marine Corps relaxing any of their standards because of this? In other words, do you think they're going to get to the point where they're going to be more interested in retaining people than...
Well, I think they may compromise in a few areas, but I don't think they're going to really relax their standards.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a few changes in the dress code and maybe the type of personal appearance you have. But as far as relaxing the standards, I don't think they'll go that far.
Mm-hmm. In your experience in the leadership areas, have you seen any changes in Marine techniques and leadership?
No, they're basically about the same as what they've been as long as I've been in.
Uh-huh.
They they still demand for their leaders and well, the officers and staff NCOs set the example and get as much out of the people as they possibly can, as far as work and effort. And
now, the unit in Newcastle, which you're assigned to now, in other words, you've been basically assigned to an engineering unit here in Youngstown, right. And one, what kind of unit is it in?
It's a headquarters battalion.
Headquarters battalion.
Right, service company.
And what does this consist of?
Well, there's different units there. They have a photography section, a reproduction center, motor transport, which I have,
uh-huh.
Supply section. It's basically that type of unit.
I see. Now, each one of these is, in other words, if it were to be mobilized or go back, what would they do? Join a bigger unit or be part of a headquarters? Is that it? Or?
Be part of a headquarters battalion, but would probably be all split up and sent in different areas.
I see. So, actually, you wouldn't be mobilized
as a unit? No.
Now, you say you're in the motor transport area. What is your responsibility there?
Well, the responsibility I have is to make sure that the 60 people that I have are trained in motor transport work, mechanics and drivers, mm-hmm. is basically what I have. And we have a responsibility to maintain the vehicles that we have. And the biggest thing is to make sure that the people are trained and able to do the job that their MOS calls for.
So basically what your job is, it's as a training officer type.
Right.
I see. How is the unit organized over there? Does each one of these units have an officer? You said there was 11 officers attached.
Right. Each section has one or more officers.
I see.
Officers
they could charge. Have more than one right. officer attached.
Well, the dispersing section, I didn't mention it before, they have, they probably have five officers. There's one captain and a couple of lieutenants and a couple of one officers.
Is this a good way to organize the units or the companies?
Well, in this type of a company, it is because each one has their own separate mission.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, say, like a line company, everyone works together. Well, over there, everyone has their own separate mission to take care of. And I think it's. It works out pretty good. Each unit is more or less self-supporting. We don't rely on anyone else to take care of our job or really to take care of us.
Now, are you required to have a certain amount of specialized technicians in a certain area, like diesel mechanics? Or?
Right, we have so many mechanics. Well, our motor transport section is divided up probably half and half, half drivers and half mechanics.
Uh-huh.
Out of the mechanics, we have a shop chief, and a couple of senior mechanics, usually E5 sergeants, and then it's broken down to the younger men.
Now,
the drivers are set up about the same way.
I see. What does a driver do when he's not driving?
Well, there's general maintenance on the vehicle that they usually take care of. Driver's maintenance, it's called. And they help out with the mechanics once in a while. They take care of the quarterly preventative maintenance schedules and the annuals, and there's more than enough to keep them busy.
I see. Do you have to keep, in other words, how do you keep trained people in a certain area? Do you recruit them from the outside, or do you try to train your own?
Well, most of the people that are just recently recruited will be sent down to an MOS training in that field, where they'll go away to boot camp, and then they'll go to an MOS training as a mechanic or a driver.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come back to us, they're partially trained, and then we have to take it from there.
I see. Now, do you have an allowance for certain specific MOSs or something like that?
It usually comes through the admin office. The first sergeant uh-huh. and CO usually take care of that.
Yeah. In other words, can you only have, let's say, 10 mechanics?
Right.
And so many of those are supposed to have an MOS that's supposed to be mechanic?
That's basically how it's set up.
I see. In your experience and everything, I'm sure it's been educational. How does your family feel about you going over there?
Well, the first, say, five to 7 years, I imagine my wife had some doubts about the reason why I stayed in the program. But
mm-hmm.
After this many years, she's kind of accepted what I do and the 2 weeks away. I've gone away for more than 2 weeks in the different times, but she gets along with the program pretty well.
Does she encourage you now, would you say? Or
I think she probably does. There were a few times when I thought about getting out, and she, I'm sure she encouraged me without me knowing about it to stay in and get, you know, finish my time up. And
mm-hmm. So basically now you're interested in completing, what, 20 years?
Well, I'd like to stay longer if there's a, if there's an opening for me.
I see. Do you think you're more dedicated now than you were when you first joined, or?
Well, I really don't think you become dedicated until after maybe your first enlistment.
Mm-hmm.
After maybe after 10 years, and then you start feeling like you're part of the program.
So basically, what you're saying is now you're there just for the program's sake, mainly for the program's sake. Of course, the retirement and all this counts in, but that'd be the main reason you.
I think so. I think that's the reason I'm still there.
The
money isn't that great, like you mentioned before. That I can't say I stay for the money, because it's not true.
Do you find this money is helpful, though? I mean, do you use it in a specific area?
I usually buy bonds for the kids with it.
I see.
For their education later on.
It's interesting. I've talked to quite a few reservists, and usually the reserve pay is for, in other words, one guy keeps buying his cars, he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's usually what I use it for. I've bought bonds and mm-hmm. invested it for them.
I see. If you had to do it all over again, you'd do it without, or would you?
I think so.
Would you go the active duty route?
Well, I think if I was right out of high school, I would have gone active duty. I probably would have stayed in, because I really do like it. I think I could have made a career out of it pretty easy.
There's also another school is that reservists are just frustrated active duty guys, and they just never stayed, so they went active duty. Do you think there's anything to that school?
Oh, maybe in 10% of them. Uh-huh. You're talking about the people that might have gone in for 2 years and came back out and stayed for the yeah. rest of their time. Maybe 10%, but not any more than that.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that...
No, not really.
Well, I want to thank you. We sat here and chatted for about 30 minutes. And
time went by pretty fast.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay.